Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Several candidates have already declared their candidacy for the 2016 national election, including several women. Other nations around the world have female presidents, and many Native nations have female leaders. Although there are women leading nations, is there still more to overcome when it comes to women in positions of power and leadership? We talk about how important women are to our nations, but does it translate to leadership roles? We're talking about women in power right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Navajo Nation plans to build a Golden Eagle aviary. It will expand a current program allowing tribal members to legally obtain feathers of the federally protected birds for ceremonial purposes. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, outgoing Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley is expected to sign legislation to fund construction.
The legislation approves nearly $500,000 for the new 4,000-square-foot facility to be built at the Navajo Nation Zoo. The aviary will accommodate more than 20 golden eagles. David McKessick is the coordinator of the zoo.
We've, for the most part, barely scratched the surface of what we're capable of doing. We hope that this will increase our ability to serve the Navajo people.
In 2012, the Navajo Nation received federal permits to distribute naturally shed eagle feathers to its members. To date, more than 500 feathers from just four birds have been distributed to about 250 people. McKessick hopes the new program will reduce the black market trade of eagle feathers and also encourage conservation and education.
The aviary in itself will allow for us to use it as a teaching tool. We will be able to save the lives of, you know, up to 20 or more eagles that are injured and cannot be put back into the wild.
The tribal program has historically been much more timely in its distribution of ceremonial feathers than a similar federal program, several weeks versus several years, according to tribal officials. They anticipate the Navajo Nation Zoo's new aviary will be finished by the fall. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The Lakota Emergence Exhibit celebrates the living history and art of Lakota people. As Charles Michael Ray tells us, the display in Rapid City, South Dakota, is the interpretation of the Lakota creation story by 16 artists.
Dr. Craig Howe is an historian and a curator of the exhibit. Howe says each artist was given a passage from a Lakota creation story and shown a set of artifacts from the Sioux Indian Museum. The artists then use the story and artifacts of the past to inform their new works.
To just do an exhibit about Lakota origin narrative that's set long, long ago, that's not that relevant to today if we just leave it like that. But when we bring in contemporary artists to interpret that, then they start to think about it and relate it to today.
For Howe, the exhibit also aims to inform viewers on a place-based history of the Black Hills.
And by learning about this narrative, we're going to learn more about where we live. We, all of us, where we live. Right here in the Black Hills, there's this a landscape that has this long, long history.
Howe says the 16 contemporary artists selected to take part in the four-day event bring a diversity of work, from oil painting to buffalo spoons to a beaded and decorated orange prison jumpsuit. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Five names were added to a monument honoring those who died in the line of duty serving Native communities. A ceremony was held Thursday at the Bureau of Indian Affairs Indian Police Academy in Artesia, New Mexico. Law enforcement officers from Alaska, Arizona, and Michigan were recognized. Officials talked about the lives lost and the importance of public safety in Indian country. The ceremony ended with the reading of names and a traditional blessing. The Indian Country Law Enforcement Officers Memorial was dedicated in the 1990s. It holds the names of more than 100 officers who served at the tribal, state, local, or federal level. President Obama appointed Princess Johnson to the Board of Trustees of the Institute of American Indian Arts, a congressionally chartered college. Johnson is Alaska Native. She's an advocate for environmental and social justice issues for Alaska Native people and has served in various leadership roles, including the former executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee. She's also known for her work on stage and in the film industry. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. There are more than 500 days until the 2016 presidential election. Many candidates have declared their intentions to run for president, including two prominent women, former Senator and U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton and businesswoman Carly Fiorina. And the question, is the U.S. ready for a female president, has been asked many times before. The campaign for Hillary Clinton has capitalized on this question with its Ready for Hillary slogan and videos. What about Native America? Are we ready for more women to take leadership roles? Perhaps the better question is, are men ready to stand behind women running things, even if it means stepping aside? And are you thinking about what a female president would mean for the United States? Does your tribe have a female president or tribal chairwoman right now? Native America always talks about how important women are, but is it time for tribal leaders to put their support where their mouths are? And we want to hear from you. The phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And joining us here in Studio 49 is Benicia Albert, and she is one of the founders of the Native American Voters Alliance, and she is Yuchi and Chippewa. It's our pleasure to welcome her back. Welcome back, Benicia.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And it's great to have you here with us. And so let's go ahead and, you know, jump into this question that often we're hearing in social media as well as news reports. What do you think about the question, are we ready for a female president?
I think we've been ready for some time. just in terms of the kind of leadership that I think women can bring to policy decisions for our country, I think it's a benefit and it's about time. As a society, do I think our society is ready to allow a female president? That's a different question.
Well, what's the difference between them, or why do you see two sides?
Because we still do live in and exist in a social structure that puts a different value on the role that women and men play in our society. Whether that is right or not is always still there, but we still live in that society. You know, we live in a society where women get paid 70 cents to the dollar to what men are getting paid. So that's a different question. The type of leadership that a woman would bring to that position absolutely, I think, are sort of valid characteristics and traits and values that women would bring to a leadership position that I think are absolutely essential for our country right now.
And are you ever surprised that we don't hear, are we ready for another male president?
Yeah, we never hear that. We never hear, oh my God, did you see what color suit he wore? but those are the things that we're going to hear in this next you know, in this next year, you know, about what kind of haircut they have, what color lipstick they wore, what color suit they had. But we don't hear those things about men, unfortunately. But that's going to be the next sort of commentary. You're going to have political commentary and fashion commentary about both of the candidates.
And as we take a look, you know, across the globe, you know, there are female presidents, places like Switzerland and Chile. Do you ever wonder, you know, why, you know, there are places around the world that this happens, but not here in the States?
Yeah, I do wonder. Like, I wonder about what are the sort of the political landscape and the climate that allow for that space to be. You know, you would think that that would be easier in this country. I mean, we have a country whose democracy is founded on the Iroquois Confederacy. You know, they left out some essential points like the role of women in leadership in that. And, you know, while the men were leaders, clan mothers had a role in choosing them or taking them out of position if they weren't doing their job right. Unfortunately, the founding fathers of this country decided to leave that portion out of the model they were trying to create by like looking at the Iroquois Confederacy model. I'm like, oh wow, that was kind of an essential point. Yeah, and it does. What that does is create a system of balancing out the roles between men and women, and you don't then have an unbalanced system where one is more prioritized over the other.
Thanks for that. And getting us to that point of, you know, in our tribal communities and the roles of women, especially when it comes to leadership or, you know, being in power, how does that compare to what you see when it comes to things like presidential elections or maybe even running heads of state? You can call in and share your thoughts today. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we've also put on the table the role of women in leadership positions like running this country. And we're going to throw that question to you, too. Do you think the U.S. is ready for a female president? Or do you think we shouldn't even be asking this question? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And Benicia, you mentioned, you know, the role of women connected to the Iroquois Confederacy. What about just kind of taking a general look at our Native nations across the country? If you were to generalize, and I know there's fault in that, but, you know, just the role of women, you know, what would you say is kind of the role when it comes to leadership?
You know, just on a basic level, you know, women's role has primarily been around raising children. Part of that responsibility of raising children is raising responsible young people who become responsible adults. So right there, there's an essential role in leadership, and like you're creating, you know, little humans who are going to become grown humans, and how do they operate and engage in the world and in the community? Are you raising them with a responsibility to care for their community, raising them to realize what they have by way of vocation and contributions that they're making to their community, responsibilities that they have to family, to ceremony? So that's already just on a base level a role that, you know, women play. I think that, you know, women also, you know, I've spent 20 plus years as a community organizer on environmental issues impacting Indian communities. You know, and there's a lot of women who do that work, who do that frontline work of like, this is what we're standing against, this is what we're doing to protect our communities. And a lot of time, you know, my experience is the women are like are doing that work of like, all right, here's how we're going to get everybody together. Here's what we're going to do. Even if the spokespeople tend to be men, right? It's really a lot of women who are doing this work of sort of organizing the sort of efforts to protect things in the community or to stand against things that are causing harm in our communities. They're usually frontline folks all the time. And you know, I've actually been fortunate to live in an age where women have taken on leadership roles of their tribal communities. And I've been fortunate to see that and to be able to be a woman to experience that kind of position and to see that happen more common. I mean, when I was a teenager first about to vote, Wilma Mankiller was the chairwoman of her tribe. Like, that was an impressive thing. And now, you know, maybe she's going to be on the money in our country. That would be an exceptional thing.
Sure. And you know, when we do talk about women leading our nations, again, I'd like to hear from some folks. If there is one of your tribal chairwomen, or maybe somebody who is running the tribe, you know, is a woman, how do you think that their role in your community, you know, it extends to tradition as well? You can give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we know a lot of times when it comes to women, you know, stepping into positions of power, it comes through the vote, not only in our tribal communities, but also on the state level. I want to get a view into that when we talk about, you know, Native women stepping into roles of leadership, maybe even, you know, out of our Native communities and on, you know, state levels. Let's go ahead and bring in another voice. Joining us from San Felipe Pueblo here in New Mexico is Deborah Holland, and she is the chairwoman of the Democratic Party of New Mexico, and she is a member of Laguna Pueblo. Welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you, Tara. Good to be here.
And Deborah, thank you for being with us here today. And we're talking about, you know, women in leadership roles. When it comes to the vote and being a leader in, you know, maybe not a Native community, but on a state level, do you think anything changes?
Do I think anything changes, meaning?
Women in power.
Women in power. So are you asking if I'm not quite sure of your question. Sorry.
Sure. I'm really wondering, you know, Benishi gave us a view of women in roles as leaders. But what about when we talk about, you know, running for state or running for a position? Does the story change? Is it harder? Are there more obstacles? Or is it the same? Just want to get a view into it.
There still are fewer women in public office, regardless of how far we've come. It's 2015, and we still have women are still a minority in public offices across New Mexico and across the country. So, you know, there's a funny statistic out there, and I'm not sure who did this statistic, but when someone asks a man to run for office, he'll answer yes immediately, like they only have to ask him once. When a woman is asked to run for office, they have to ask her seven times because she thinks about her family, her home, her job, her, you know, all these other factors come into play when a woman is making a decision to run for public office. And so I think that's interesting, and that probably has something to do with why there are fewer women in office, because they, you know, they're, as long as their family's okay, they're okay, I think. And so, you know, they have other things to consider besides just themselves. So certainly it, you know, it's always a struggle, but we keep working at it to try to get more women involved.
And Deborah, you have been newly elected into a new position. How would you say, you know, what you've faced and in our discussion on women in leadership roles, how would you say that, you know, some of this echoes to what we're learning today about when a woman steps into a leadership role?
Well, I mean, you know, as you might, you had me on your show last year when I was running for lieutenant governor. And for me, I think it's, you know, we've been talking a lot about women in leadership roles in our tribal communities. And for me, I'm the chairwoman of our Economic Development Corporation board, but I've never held a leadership position in my tribal government before. But, you know, I feel like a lot of Native women, you know, they feel like they have something to offer. And so if they can't play a role in their tribal communities, then, you know, they feel they have something to offer in communities outside of their tribe. And as we know, state government, federal government, interact with tribal governments. And so I think women in leadership roles in either, you know, county, local, municipal, state, federal will also give them an opportunity to help their communities.
All right. Thanks for that, Deborah. And again, our phone lines are open. If you'd like to join us, call in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join us. And Deborah, I got to ask you the question, too. What do you think about the question that's put on the table? Are we ready for a female president?
Oh, I think we absolutely are. I mean, I'm sure some people don't think that. And we'll see that at the polls, right, in November of 2016. We'll see who doesn't think a woman's ready. But I think the majority of Americans will think that we're ready for a woman president. And, I'm really happy that we've gotten to this point. There'll be two women candidates on in either party. And I think that will add a lot of energy and enthusiasm to the campaign season.
All right. Thanks for that, Deborah. And, you know, I know a lot of people are curious as to what people are thinking about this. This is your chance, Native America. Go ahead and chime in. Answer that question. Are we ready for a female president? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. On our program some time ago, we had Margot Gray, who was joining us, and she was talking about the buckskin ceiling instead of the glass ceiling. Cecilia Fire Thunder also talks about this, too. And I want to get both of your take on this, on how you feel, Native women might be limited when it comes to taking positions of power. Benishi, go ahead and start us off. What do you think about the buckskin ceiling?
I think that term is funny, but it's real. there are still challenges. I mean, yes, Deborah is right that in we find ourselves in 2015 and, you know, the suffrage movement was many, many years ago, and yet still we're in this place where it's a struggle to get paid equally for identical work. It's a struggle for women to be accepted into certain fields around law, around business, business management, you know. And I was thinking and preparing for this show, I was like, wow, where are the Native CEOs? Where are the Native CEOs? And where are the Native women CEOs running, like, you know, national companies or not? So, you know, and it's not just about the corporate part of that, but that's also a position of power that people have. And right now, those positions are held by men. And so, if we want to see that happen, it's also going to take an effort of men in those positions providing space or moving from those spaces. Yes, there's efforts that women can make and they're, you know, always doing what they can do. But, you know, I think part of that hitting that buckskin ceiling, if you will, is that women have to then try twice as hard to prove themselves. They have to try twice as hard to make sure that their attitude and mannerisms are not too aggressive, but aggressive enough to, like, be in a conference room of men, right? And so it becomes this sort of double-edged sword where it's like double effort that women are making for the same positions that, you know, and that has really largely to do with the culture of our society right now in the U.S. that says, you know, men play this role, women play this role. Men are out here working, doing what they need to do. Women need to be home taking care of the families, right? So, you know, I think one getting to challenge and push back against that buckskin ceiling is also being able to, like, come out of the homes.
And it's funny because usually Cecilia will talk about get out your knife and just cut a hole and get through it. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and take a call. We have Sarah here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Sarah, welcome to the hour.
Oh, yes. Thank you for the show. Can you hear me pretty well?
Yep, hear you loud and clear.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I'm in so much full support of running for president and all these offices. And, you know, and it is right. It's that, you know, I just can't still believe that women are still raised by their mothers and grandmothers to be in a subservient position to a man. I mean, I was particularly raised that way. And, you know, I'm trying to figure out why this has always been, like, saturated into, like, almost everybody's culture, you know, that women have to be kind of less than a man, you know, you know, because I was, like, for example, like, my friend was getting her 2 college degrees, and her mother said, and she was Native, and they told her, well, how are you going to get a man if you're smarter and more educated than all the men? And that was her concern.
All right, Sarah, I want to get Deborah's take on this. Deborah, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, I understand that. You know, I'm enrolled at Laguna Pueblo, and we have very distinctive traditional, you know, man and gender roles with respect to all of our traditions. And I completely and wholly support and you know I respect all of those roles. However, when it does come to education and you know the fact that you need to support yourself, I am not married. So I do have to work and support myself, and I felt at the time when I was pursuing my education that I needed to do something for myself where I didn't have to rely on anybody else. And so that's sort of been my thing. But I do, you know, some of these histories go back so far. You know, the Pueblo Indians were heavily influenced by the Spanish. You know, we have the Spanish form of government, governors, lieutenant governors, fiscales, medumas, all of that. And but, you know, long time ago, before the Spanish came, I don't think Pueblo people would have survived if men and women didn't equally share in the work that it took to, you know, sustain themselves. So I think the men do recognize that women's roles are important and that they probably couldn't, you know, carry on without us. but yet at the same time, I know it's sort of a difficult situation to be in. And that's one of the reasons probably why I've chosen to run for public office and to do things outside of my Pueblo, because I feel like maybe I could have, you know, more of an impact on Native women that way. You know, you want to be a role model, or you want to give women the courage to step out and do something too. So that's one of my things. But yes, I understand what Sarah's talking about completely.
All right, Sarah, again, thank you for your call. You can also join us today. We are talking about women in leadership roles, women in power. And if you'd like to add your opinion or thoughts today, please do call in 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And I guess we're also talking about gender equality. And how does gender equality play out in our tribal communities? Did traditionally, you know, was there balance? And today it's unbalanced or something else. Call us. Tell us what you think. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And you can also reach out to us on Twitter. We tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and we're on Facebook too. We'll be right back. In Native America, it can be hard to find a mate who's also Native. When it's slim pickings, where do you go to find eligible Native bachelors and bachelorettes? Does blood quantum, location, or personal preference get in the way? Or have you given up on finding a Native mate altogether? Join us for the next Native America Calling.
Support by NativeGiving.org, empowering Native children and families through community giving. The organizations included on NativeGiving.org are developing strength-based solutions to ensure the health and well-being of our most valuable resource, our children.
All the donations made on NativeGiving.org go toward the organization you choose.
Information on how you can partner with successful innovations at NativeGiving.org. Support for Native America Calling comes from KeyBank's Native American Financial Services team, focused exclusively on serving the full financial service needs of Native American nations for more than 50 years. KeyBank is member FDIC.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and thank you for joining us today. And if you'd like to hear about our upcoming shows, please visit our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And you can also sign up for our weekly newsletter. And we have a podcast of Native America Calling that you can sign up for on iTunes. And today we are talking about Women in Power Today. In Chile and Switzerland and many more countries, there are females heads of states. And why do you think we haven't had a female president yet in this country? And is your tribe ready for a woman in power? And does your nation already have a female leader? And what role do women play in leadership in your tribe? Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And now joining us from New York is Barbara Ortiz Howard, and she is the founder of Women on the 20, an organization that is pushing for a woman to replace Andrew Jackson on the $20 bill. Welcome to Native America Calling, Barbara.
Thank you so much for having me. It's quite an honor.
And Barbara, we're talking about, women stepping into leadership roles. The organization is putting on something pretty unique. It's calling for women to be on the $20 bill. I know one woman who is up for the vote is Wima Mankiller. Give us a little background of how this came to be and why do we need a woman on a $20 bill?
There are many items there for good discussion. But going back to the original premise that you were saying is how does female leadership, feminine leadership, affect us? And women do lead from a new perspective, I think, than what we've had, and it's refreshing. And Chipewyma Mankiller clearly is a great demonstration of what that kind of leadership can bring and how she and reinvigorated her nation and brought hope and also very tangible improvement in many metrics of quality of life. And certainly if we have the same problems and we look at them from the same perspective, we will not resolve those problems. So women in leadership is essential, is in my belief, in order to tackle the many challenges that we have today that will have to get resolved. So by putting a woman on a $20 bill reminds us, and any of these women showed great leadership, Rosa Parks, Eleanor Roosevelt, Harriet Tubman, of course, Chief Mankiller, as I mentioned before, they showed and demonstrated their leadership and their ability to rise above circumstances and show us a new way, a new path to resolving huge problems.
And Barbara, when we think about the $20 bill, what was also the thinking behind just replacing Andrew Jackson?
The thinking behind replacing Andrew Jackson specifically, although it did not start out as motivated by removing Andrew Jackson, and many people had that premise, had felt that for some time now apparently have had a desire to remove him for his offensive policies and hurtful policies and policies that cause death and wreak havoc for people in many ways. But this campaign only started out as a way to celebrate women, honor their contributions to our society, and honor our centennial right of voting rights, which is going to be in 2020, the ratification of the 19th Amendment having been in 2020. So two things we were looking at. We want to be have a woman on a denomination of significance that is used in our daily experience so that it's seen. The coins that we had before, for example, the $1 coin that Dr. DeWay is on and the one that Susan B. Anthony is on, is not really used very much, and Ellen DeGeneres said it very well, like we could do better than feed meters. So we want to be on a paper currency that's very important that people see every day coming out of their ATM machine.
Sure. You know, 20s definitely circulate a lot. And Barbara, the goal is to get enough signatures, to send the people's voice straight to the president. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I'm proud to say that we have, over 600,000 votes right now in both campaigns, using both campaigns, the primary and this final election, which people can still vote, and I hope that they still do until Mother's Day. It's very important. www.womenon20s.org. I believe you do have that link up on your own site. And we have until Mother's Day, 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time. So hoping people do come out and vote for their candidate, for their choice, whether it's Chief Man Killer or another candidate, come on out. Because the more names, the more this mandate is going to compel the Secretary of the Treasury, who has the authority to make such a decision, and also persuade the President, who is going to certainly want to be involved in such a historic change.
And Barbara, go ahead and name all the four candidates that are up for the vote, and go ahead and give out the website one more time, please.
Sure. In no particular order, we have Rosa Parks, our civil rights icon, who brought forth a huge change in the way we look at our, brought up the disparity between our laws and what we actually do in our day-to-day. We have Eleanor Roosevelt, First Lady of the World, who brought to us the Declaration of Human Rights. Harriet Tubman, who demonstrated the greatest courage any person could possibly demonstrate by returning back into very dangerous territory to free people and from slavery, and then also to help Union soldiers as a nurse, as a guide, and as in any capacity that she could. And, of course, Chief Wilma Mankiller, who was elected chief for three unprecedented terms, improving quality of life, education, economy for the Cherokee people, and also was a symbol of she's a great supporter of women's rights altogether, and we quote her saying that, until she became chief, young girls could not believe that they could one day.
All right, Barbara. Well, they are all great candidates, and we appreciate you telling us a little bit more about that. And check out our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And again, the name of the initiative is Women on the 20s. You can find that online, too. Barbara Howard, thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling. And again, you can voice your opinion right now if you're going to vote later on this and you want to tell us about, putting a woman on the 20, you can call us right now, 1-800-996-2848, again, is our number. I'd like to go ahead and bring our guests back into the discussion. On the line from San Felipe Pueblo, New Mexico, is Deborah Holland, and she is the chairwoman of the Democratic Party of New Mexico. She is from Laguna Pueblo. Also here in Studio 49 with us, we have Benishi Albert, and she is one of the founders of the Native American Voters Alliance, and she is Yuchi and Chippewa. I want to welcome both of them back and hear your thoughts about putting, the possibility of maybe even putting Wilma Mankiller on the $20 bill. Deborah, let's start with you.
Oh, well, of course. It's long overdue. We only have men, and you know, I mean, I know they put presidents on. However, you know, it's been sort of unfair because we haven't had any women presidents, but we have had exceptional women leaders in this country. So I'm all for that, and I'll go on and vote. But it looks like it's a tough decision because the four women on, you know, that are being proposed are all wonderful women.
All right. Thanks for that, Deborah. And Benishi, your thoughts?
I'm excited about the possibility of what it would be like for young people to see anybody different on money. You know, just the idea that both young women being impacted, but young men also being able to see the value of women and what they've contributed to our country, and to as leaders and as change makers, to be able to see that also changes the dynamic. You know, so it's not just about empowering women, but it's also about young men realizing what is, you know, what is the value of women in the society that they live in.
And here's something from their website. They say our money does say something about us and what we value. Benishi, do you think that, you know, some of that is there?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think one of the things that that, you know, women bring to leadership, even like I think there is a set of qualities that women can bring to leadership around forethought and planning, you know, the caring of whole communities, you know, thoughtfulness, diplomacy. You know, women are fiercely protective over what they care for and love. You know, they're caring, they're resourceful. I mean, if you've seen any grandma try to make sure that she can feed her whole family and grandkids, you know, through the whole month. Those are very resourceful women. So, you know, those are the types of leadership opportunities that I think that women bring to any kind of community. So, yes, when you say, you know, is our country ready for a woman leader? I think those are valuable leadership traits that could impact issues that we're facing as a country right now. I mean, there's a lot of unrest and turmoil going on right now in our country. And I think that the role that women could play in facilitating through that would be a very good role, you know, not only being able to sort of negotiate the space, but also to say, this is what we're going to do. You know, I tease my children all the time, like, you know, you live in a benevolent dictatorship. I'm mama, and this is what's going to happen. You know, but I also, you know, I hear them out. I respect their opinion. I want to hear that. And so, and I think there's that type of, you know, role that women can play and to help, you know, resolve some of the like fundamental issues that we're facing as a society in this country and some things that are very, very hard to go through. I think women taking leadership in that role would be powerful in making the changes that need to happen.
Thanks, Benishi. And again, our phone lines are open. You can give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we do want to hear from our male listeners today, too. What do you think about the role of women in positions of power for our country or maybe even our tribe? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. 2848. And Deborah, you know, what role do men play in also, you know, seeing more women in positions of leadership or power? Deborah?
What role? Well, I mean, I think when a woman runs for office, so I just told you that I'm not married. So when I make a decision to run for office, I do have a daughter. She's 20. She doesn't live with me any longer. She has her own little place, and she'll be a senior at UNM next year. So if I make a decision to run for office, she's the first person I call. But I don't have to worry about a spouse at home and, you know, how that would impact their lives. But I know that a lot of women do. A lot of women do have to worry about that aspect of it. But I would suspect that, that you know, if it's on the home front, the spouse should always support you know, the other spouse in their endeavors, because you have to believe that, you know, people make those decisions because they want a better society or better, you know, something for their families down the road. And but I think that, you know, we men are voters just as much as women are. And so we need the men to support us, of course, on a large scale, because, you know, we need all of that support. And, of course, you choose candidates because you identify with them. You choose candidates because you feel they understand what your issues are, you know, what your struggles are, and so that's the reason why it's important for, you know, when you identify with someone that you help them to get them into office, because that's the way, you know, our political process works. We need to work together to elect the people who care about the things that we care about. One of the reasons why I've been so adamant about getting the vote out in Indian country. I've done that for a very long time, just because I feel like Native people should have a say in who their elected officials are.
You know? All right, thanks for that, Deborah. And again, you can share your thoughts with us, too. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And as we look at women in power, we know that Native women also enjoy careers in many different professions and often speak about different types of adversity that they encounter in the workplace. We caught up with one Navajo woman who's widely known in New Mexico and the Navajo Nation, Linda Lovejoy. And she worked in public service for more than 2 decades, serving in the New Mexico legislature and the State Public Regulations Commission. And she also put her bid in twice for president of the Navajo Nation, running for office in 2006 and 2010, winning both primaries but losing in the general elections. Lovejoy recently was honored at the Tribal Telecom Conference, actually this week in Albuquerque, for her role as a leader in state government. And we also asked her to share some thoughts about women and equal pay.
Well, you know, in public service, in politics, we got to prove ourselves. Many of us have done that. And so we can't always expect equal pay, but we can continue to educate the same as any other important issues, women's choice, things of that nature that are very important to women and families. And yes, there are a lot of corporate companies who would rather pay a woman in a prestigious position less money than the male. So there's a lot of unfairness, inequality still exists. I've lived through it. My goodness, I know what discrimination is. I know what inequality is. But it just happens that those kind of things take very, very slow to change.
All right. And again, that was Linda Lovejoy. Benicia, I'm going to go to you for this one. You know, what about when it does come to equal pay? Any thoughts?
We should expect it. I think that, you know, when we're talking about education and the professions that people go into and have to get a degree and the program, those schools are open. Women are attending and going to those schools. So the education level is identical. And so then why wouldn't somebody be paid equally valued for their work if they're going to the same educational institutions as men? I think there is an expectation that, you know, that should, for me anyway, you know, I feel like I want to live in a time where I'm valued equally for the work that I contribute to the community as my male counterparts. And folks who are strong allies to the work. But yeah, I think there, you know, I don't really know the solutions to make that happen. But it is part of what we have to deal with and continue to have to deal with, even in 2015. We're still dealing with women not being paid equally for the work that they do. And also that, you know, there are professions that are primarily women that are not, their work is not valued. Number one that I will say is teachers. While there are both men and women teachers, that field of work is primarily women, and we can see in our society how we value teachers by the pay scale that we give them, and then, you know, by how we're sort of scapegoating them about the sort of challenges and problems that we're dealing with as a society in our education system. It's like, oh, well, let's blame the teachers and let's not pay them. Let's not pay them good wages. So, you know, and there's lots of other professions such as that where the role of women as child care providers, as nurses, as midwives, as teachers, that work is often lower to middle class paid work.
And Deborah, when you hear that, you know, women aren't getting paid equally as men, you know, what comes to mind?
Well, the thing for me is single moms. Single moms come to mind, you know, which I am one. I raised my daughter pretty much on my own. And, you know, that's just the way our society is. We have a lot of single moms, and they deserve to make as much as men. You know, I'm not sure. And, of course, you know, there's one political party that favors pay equality, and there's another political party that will vote against it every chance they get. And I just don't understand why this isn't a bipartisan issue that everyone should want equal pay for all citizens. You know, our sons and our daughters deserve to, you know, to be treated fairly in the workplace. And so I, you know, that's something that I'll always advocate for. It's just blatantly unfair.
All right. Thanks for that, Deborah. We got a caller we're going to bring in. We have John on the line in Bethel, Alaska, tuned in on KYUK. John, welcome to the hour. What would you like to add?
Yes, I'd like to make it short. I'm calling from Bethel, Alaska, listening to KYUK. I'd like to say that women are taking over this place, too. You know, they do a good job around here. And for instance, we have a corporate president that made us a nice, big-sized building that's got a theater in it and a store, which unfortunately closed. And there's another woman who works at Parks and Rec that built a swimming pool that was 20 years on down the road. We finally got it. And that's all I like to say. And women are good in power. They can do good in power.
All right, John, thank you for your call there in Bethel, Alaska. And John reminds us, you know, it isn't always about, you know, who is running as president or maybe who's running the state. Sometimes it's just somebody who's leading the team at a place like, you know, local swimming pool. Benishi, anything you'd like to add about just also remembering, you know, leadership in some places that don't get all the highlights?
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of leadership. I mean, I've spent 20 plus years being a community organizer, and with, you know, where there's a lot of men and women carrying on that work, and I've, you know, fortunately been able to grow my own career in that work. You know, there's leadership in you know, there's, if I remember right, there's a new judge in Arizona, who was appointed to the Supreme Court. It was a woman, a Native woman.
I think you're referring to Diane Humitewa?
Yeah. And so, you know, I think there's starting to be more of these places where women are taking leadership roles, not necessarily just in elected office or in higher elected office, but in local elections, I mean, with city councils and school boards, but also having themselves to be able to be in a position to be appointed to some positions. But yeah, leadership, you know, and mothers every day are taking leadership in their families. And yes, I think there is something to be said for our traditional communities where men and women do have very specific roles, but those roles are valued and being able to contribute to the community as a whole, that there's balance in how those roles are valued. That's not to say they're not overshadowed by our larger society and looking at like, oh, no, well, then men have more power and should have more power. In traditional communities, women still hold pretty strong leadership roles. They hold purse strings many times in the family. And I think those are valuable, continue to be valuable roles that support our families, our communities, our culture, and the power that we have as tribal communities. I think women are still always reinforcing that and reinforcing that with the young men that they're trying to raise. You know, it's not to say that we're not without challenges, but that we're still trying to raise whole families, young men and young women together to say, you know, here's the work that is expected of you, and here's how you need to respect each other's work.
Well, when we talk about, you know, leadership roles and we mention mother, you know, a lot of people this weekend will be paying tribute to, you know, some of their leaders in their own household. So in the spirit of that, Benishi, you know, maybe not just your mom, but, you know, any other Native women you'd like to just pay homage to right now who have inspired you through their leadership?
Oh, yes. There's so many. Neelock Butler, she's been gone and passed for some years. Was a profound mentor of mine, Jackie Warlito, my auntie and relative, Winona LaDuke, Joanne Tall, my mother, Darlene Albert, who, you know, toted me with her to Wounded Knee when I was a baby. And you know, I have lots of mothers, Kamala Papans, a profound artist and photographer, and there's so many. And yes, and I appreciate my children for making me a mother and being one of my most proud leadership roles that I have.
Well, that music means we have to wrap up the hour, and it has been a pleasure to visit with you, Benishi Albert, also Deborah Holland on the line too. And we're going to be back again on Monday with the show about being single in Native America. And if you're single and ready to mingle, want to tell us about it, send us a tweet right now at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And also tribute to all of our leaders and our families, all you mothers out there. We are sending you good thoughts here from Studio 49. And also thanks to our crew here, Tristan Autone, Monica Brain, Andy Murphy, Stephen Emmons, and Kaveh Movahed screened your calls today. Also thanks to Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News. I'm your host, Tara Gatewood.
Thanks to Noise Cat Studios for their support. Now located in Washington State, their work can be found at noisecatstudios.com or in person at 431 Southeast State Road 3 in Shelton.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov.
Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation in Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kowanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.